Okay, so as a sort of digital finissage to the seventh edition of Der Öffentlichkeit von den Freunden Haus der Kunst, we decided to have a brief conversation with Kapwani Kiwanga about the installation that's been seen in both digitally and in person in Haus der Kunst Middle Hall since October last year. What we thought we'd do here is just speak about the work, how it changed, and obviously the future of the work and the future of Kapwani's practice over the years. So, first and foremost, Kapwani, thank you so much for agreeing to take part in this interview.
My pleasure.
And I thought we would just start by talking about how the work itself changed. The work ended up comprising two small acts. There was obviously the first act, which opened at the beginning of October. And then just after the lockdown period, there was actually a small, very subtle alteration between the work. The plants changed, the lighting changed. And this, I think, really spoke about the work comprising several elements, not just the objects and their placement within the space, as well as the viewers and their negotiation of the bodies and objects in the space, but as well as the way in which the work really tapped into changing environmental conditions, both perceptible and invisible. And I just thought at the beginning to, if it would be great if you could talk about your thinking about this sort of slight changes that occurred between the first and second iteration of the work.
Yeah, sure. I think we had a lot of aspirations on how I think materialize the question of flux and ephemerality, which is often present in my work. So the choice of the particular fabrics that themselves are kind of continually changing, appearing, disappearing, becoming more dense or transparent depending on one's position and layering. Are already kind of materially, that's the backbones, the skeleton of the installation. So of course, when you have such, I think, changeable elements that are transparent, that work with light, changing the lighting was a way to, I think, push that even further. The lighting which we open with was, of a colder, more on the blue kind of tones, which if we're thinking about seasons and changing moments of light, that made sense that a brighter or kind of warmer light, which slightly shifted in the second, I guess, section of or moment of the installation, really follows with that, like using light itself as a building element to change the installation. And of course, there's the question of the plants. So the plants need to be taken care of. They need to be cared for continuously. And with these lockdowns, there was, sometimes not able to take care of them particularly. So there needed to be some changing of the plants, but also there always was this idea that, from our conception when we started to talk about this, was trying to find plants that were local, that somehow spoke to the English gardens. And of course, as seasons change, there's different plants that have more presence than others. So it was in keeping, it maybe wasn't our first intention, but the changing of the lights, but also the changing of the plants were very much in keeping with our original idea of adapting and being, I think, somewhat in sync with changing moments of the seasons.
And so, I mean, this work was really a continuation of a practice that's gone on for many years now that looks at the movement histories and uses of fauna. We saw this, of course, not just in this work, but your contribution to Art Basel Unlimited, and of course, your ongoing project Flowers for Africa, for example. How did this particular commission contribute to this field of research?
Yeah, it's very much in a kind of continuation of a long interest in how plants and flowers can somehow speak to a social, political, economic histories. So when your invitation was extended to create something for the Middle Hall, the English Gardens, of course, really emerged as an interesting historic point, and also a quote-unquote case study of looking at how gardens are landscaped, how those are themselves, nature is sculpted by humanity, and also how green spaces, plants and flowers become an arena, I guess, of public space. So looking at the history of the English Gardens was really fascinating for me. And so I wanted to bring that into the installation. But there was also this long going interest in how plants travel and the different, I guess, systems or technologies that allow for that travel, be that scientific, you know, experimentation or scientific study, which allows for crops and different plants to grow more efficiently. And in that long questioning around, you know, science, technology, and I guess migration of plants, the Wardian case has been with me for some time. And so the inflatable sculptures that punctuate the installation are really much a future thinking of what a Wardian case could be. So the Wardian case being these kind of glass terrariums that protect and allow for a microcosm for plants to exist in. So having these two things, this idea of, you know, the history of a particular space, which is, you know, the English gardens and its history, and also a tangent kind of research and interest around technology and plants kind of came together in this particular project, where both of those interest areas were manifest in the installation. And that question around the Wardian case is actually has continued. I was thinking about that and experimenting with making these PVC sculptures that house live plants. Informed a project which may or may not be realized, but I hope it will. I'm now shortlisted as one of the projects for a plinth project on the High Line in New York. And that particular project is very much a continuation of this thinking around the Wardian case, because it is a proposition of a sculpture which contains glass and also a stone sculpture within that, a stone sculpture of actually a fern. So what I was thinking around these Wardian cases and experimenting and creating within the Middle Hall as these futuristic, I guess, supports for plant life, not housing it or containing it as the Wardian cases were, continues in this other iteration that I'm proposing for the High Line, which, you know, we'll see, I guess, in the coming months if it will actually be realized. But in any case, it was one of the shortlisted projects. So it's something that still is continuing to kind of resonate with me, this idea of this terrarium of sort.
And I mean, that's a very interesting way in which it also connects to the main, I suppose, one of the main taglines of this particular commission series, and that's, of course, the idea of publicness. The commission series at Haus der Kunst is called Der Öffentlichkeit, and looks at ways in which artworks can both engage with the public but also generate new forms of publicness. And in this way, I thought it would be interesting if you could respond to how this idea of the work engaging with and creating different forms of publicness changed over the course of the project. First, obviously, from its implementation and installation, which of course was completely surrounded by the hurdles of the current pandemic, and having to do things online and having to shift things in that way. But also how the actual project's reception itself shifted between being sort of encountered in the space of Haus der Kunst and also being encountered online in its subsequent presence being generated there. I just mentioned before about how the work almost became an object of desire online, where people, there was a post about somebody talking about missing the sunshine that was actually within Haus der Kunst. In your opinion, how did the sort of these questioning of publicness change through the work's occupation of the Middle Hall over the last 6 or 7 months?
Yeah, I think it's something that we experienced, I guess, across the board. But I think particularly with this work, because it is so phenomenological. I mean, your body, I think, really experiences it. And there's I got, you know, a lot of great feedback from people who didn't experience it physically, but saw images of it and were very taken by it. And you know, requests from different curators to speak about, you know, this particular installation and what it meant for me and to walk them through it in some way. So I had an overwhelming kind of interest virtually, because people, you know, were not able to visit it. Mm-hmm. But I think there is that thing of really wanting to, understanding that even from the images, that one needs to be in this space to experience it. One needs to, you know, be within that I don't know, yeah, be within an installation, to be with art, and that there's only so much we can apprehend or experience from work through a screen or through images. And, you know, we really, our body needs to be in a space and encountering artwork to have that real connection. And that's always how I think about my work. I always think about how the body receives a work or interacts with the work. There's a large bit of intellectual I guess intelligence that I imagine is happening for the viewer, but I'm always thinking about also how that body circulates through the space, how the body encounters a color and what that does for their body, or encounters a small or expansive space. So I think that publicness going online allowed it to continue to circulate. It intrigued. I think it also drew people towards it. But I think there definitely, you're right, that there was this frustration of being, but, you know, I really want to be in it. And that's, I think, a real compliment to the work that we all did together, that even through the images, this kind of, it was very palpable that it was a sensual experience, in sort of like the senses really wanted to be in contact with that that space where light and you know, just space itself, light and space are needed to be experienced by the body. So I hope that, you know, in the next days when it opens again, that people can, bodies can physically be in the space and experiencing it. But despite that reality, I think it did translate through images quite well, regardless of the limits that it does have. It still existed online and throughout the world. I was getting people who were drawn to it. So yeah, I think that speaks to how well we were able to work together and inhabit that space.
And that obviously leads to questions about the future of the work, because obviously the work is on the one hand a site-specific commission. On the other hand, though, it is perpetually adaptable. You know, you have the components that I mentioned before, you know, the objects, the viewers, and changing environmental conditions. And the objects themselves comprise the three hanging curtains, as well as the three inflatable sculptures, the Wardian cases. And with this in mind, and I mean, they could in various ways, of course, be adapted to different spaces, hung in different configurations. Different plants could obviously be selected and installed relative to where it was. I thought it would be interesting to think about, you know, how would or could this work change in a different setting? You know, should it actually go elsewhere and give other publics, you know, the opportunity to engage with it?
Yeah, I would hope that there would be a second life or third life to this installation. And I think we can't really know until the space offers itself, right? So if there is another space that could accommodate this work, it'd be lovely to be able to show it again. But the work would have to adapt to its space, because I always think about, you know, not everything is site specific, but a lot of things are protocolar in my way of working. So the protocol is that it adapts then to the space that it's invited into. And of course, light conditions will change, you know, which colors could be used. But there is something that is, I think, the fundamentals are there. The groundwork is there, that this work could definitely be adapted in different ways. And, you know, that's the job of, I think, an artist and curators and people that are working in our fields to always think about how these quote-unquote raw materials that we have, or these building blocks, can then still communicate the thing that we would like to communicate, but maybe in slightly different configurations. So I think that the supports, which I'm calling these vivariums, these PVC structures with metal, very much are that. They're kind of, they're a holding space that would allow for other plant life to be inserted based on how that resonates with the space that it's being shown in. For example, if it's being shown in a North American setting, then I would think, of course, using local, or maybe not even local, but because local is very, very limited, perhaps. I think so. Plants that are found in the area that could have come from elsewhere as well. But I think that's a way of adapting to the and resonating with the space in which the exhibition might find itself. And I think it's a similar thing with the curtains. They can or the fabric works rather, that they can be as in Haus der Kunst, it was the layering and the depth of the space allowed for it to be layered in a very kind of, I think, linear way. Mm-hmm. But another space might ask for that layering to happen in a more horizontal way, or it could be in working with verticality in a different way. So I couldn't know how those fabric pieces can adapt until the space offers itself. But I do think that there's always a question of flexibility and mutability in my work. So the work, if that's what I want of it, it should be able to always adapt to a new space.
Yeah, because I mean, you have with the elements of the work, you have both the forms of the curtains or the hanging canvases. We had the two very linear ones, followed by the crescent shaped one, and of course they could be adapted to create different cul-de-sacs, different sort of little points of focus, but also of course the placement of the sculptures within this sort of this map, this topography, so to speak, could obviously be adapted as different ways to lead the viewer through the space, so to speak.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously the plants. And I mean, throughout this process, I should add, I mean, this is something that we obviously learned as well. The fact that trying to create a site-specific sculpture with these plants, that were meant to respond to very specific conditions, and those conditions were the middle hall of this museum, actually finding out that a lot of the local plants, a lot of the indigenous plants of the area were actually the least suited to this sort of environment. It seemed to be that actually a lot more of the imported exotic plants, maybe because of that history of movement, were actually in a very real way in terms of being able to survive through a German winter, were actually better suited to this space as the local plants.
Yeah, that's true. It's that kind of that paradox, isn't it? And these house plants, which are in fact have been taken from elsewhere, that fare better than those who have been left to respond more to their natural quote unquote surroundings. Yeah, it's this conundrum of sorts. But that's the whole thing of working with live plants. Is I have this exhibition that's opened recently just outside of Paris in a place called Crédac in Ivry-sur-Seine, and there I've created a rice. I'm growing rice, in fact, and there's a whole protocol and a lot of care that has to go into making sure that these plants first sprouted and that they stay healthy and that they grow. And there was all these decisions that kept on being made and remade to adapt the form of the structures and the installation to the needs of the plants. So I think that's always a question with, if plot is shown elsewhere, where those conversations will have to happen again with a local florist or a landscape architect or whomever to think about the space that can accommodate the sculptures and plants and the plants themselves. So it's a continual kind of learning and research process, and that is continually adapting because we're working with living things, right?
That feeds into obviously the double meaning of the name of the installation, plot, not just being like a garden plot or a place where somebody plants something, but obviously a plot is in a narrative sense, in that the installation is actually the result of a narrative of a conversation that has to happen with several actors, about the sort of suitability of certain elements within the actual work itself.
Definitely. I mean, like plot does have that double meaning of thinking of how to activate the space as well, and how we can extend these narratives outside of the actual installation, but also maybe accommodate narratives in the installation. So those narratives could be performative, those narratives could be discussions. All of those things were lovely spaces I hope that the installation could accommodate in the future when we're able to gather again. But for now, I think it's those conversations and the narratives are happening, in other spaces, thinking about you know, what it evokes for people in their minds and how they then share with those around them. So for now, I take comfort in that the narrative is happening in more, I guess, intimate spaces. But it would be nice if at one moment the plot is able to be broadened to accommodate other narrative forms.
The plot thickening, so to speak. And just finally, I suppose I'm just looking ahead. I know that people listening to this would really like to know what is happening. I mean, it seems almost giddy trying to keep up with all the projects that you're currently working on at the moment. But just for the friends who will be listening to this interview, what do you have any particular upcoming projects, you know, within Europe that you know, particularly excite you? You've just spoken about this one on the outskirts of Paris, but what else is happening for you, say, over the coming year?
Mm-hmm. So for the summertime, there'll be a couple installations. There'll be one in Middelheim, so in Antwerp, which opens the end of May, and that's an outdoor sculpture park. And there I'll be showing the Flowers for Africa Rwanda, this large arch that I first showed in Art Basel. Mm-hmm. So that'll be part of a group exhibition I'll be on for some months. And at the Luma Foundation, which is opening up in Arles in June, I'll also be part of a group exhibition where I'll be showing the entirety of my Flowers for Africa series. So these, this installation contains as well that large arch from which may have been seen in Basel, so Flowers for Africa Rwanda, but also the others in the series. So there's so there's basically flowers that are cut, flowers that are left to run the course by drying out or wilting over the exhibition period. And all of these floral arrangements are based on moments that were key to African independence. So different countries, particular moments of either signings of agreements or declarations of independence. So these key moments that were kind of witnessed by these floral arrangements are placed in exhibition space. So that will also be opening in the summer. And across the sea in the United States, I'll be opening a solo exhibition in September in Houston at the Moody Center, which is linked to Rice University, where I'll be doing new productions. Again, looking not at plants per se. I mean, there'll be some not live plants anyways, but there'll be a lot of organic materials, geological kind of interests as well. So yeah, and there'll be a lot kind of happening in the fall as well. There'll be some things picking up in terms of group shows, etc. But I guess those are my big ones, are the summer exhibitions and then this opening in September in Houston.
Well, look, I know I speak for all of the friends when I say that this particular iteration of the Fentlichkeit has been absolutely fantastic and absolutely needed during this present moment in Haus der Kunst. And we've spoken a bit about the sort of the idea of a narrative. And we all sincerely hope that, you know, this is just a chapter in a much wider narrative that will continue going on, you know, both in terms of the series, but of course in our working together. It's been a wonderful. It's been wonderful to have the work occupy our gallery spaces over the last 7 or so months. And on behalf of all the friends, I'd just like to thank you so much for contributing to this wonderful project.
Well, thank you for the trust, and I think we're on both sides. We all have ambitions, right? We're quite ambitious teams, and that the Middle Hall offers to go to the end of that ambition. So thank you for the opportunity and the support to be able to be as ambitious as we were. And let's hope that, you know, we can continue to be ambitious in the future in all our different projects. So thank you for your trust.
Sincerely hope so.